Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
You're listening to the Co-Main Event Podcast. And now your hosts, Ben Folks and Chad Dundas.
That's right. You're listening to another episode of the Co-Main Event Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm Chad Dundas. That's Ben Folks. We're both longtime MMA journalists, and for the last 11 years, we've been meeting here every week to break down all the action in the wild, weird, and occasionally wonderful world of mixed martial arts. Ben, we had dueling fight cards over the weekend. You had the UFC Fight Night headlined by Grant Dawson and Bobby Green, and then, of course, you had Bellator 300 headlined by three consecutive title fights on the Showtime Paramount Plus main card. In the UFC, you had a fairly sizable upset as Bobby Green stops Grant Dawson just 33 seconds into the first round. Over in Bellator, not so much. Every champion retained their title, all of it playing out according to chalk. None of it was particularly exciting, and Bellator continues its long, slow, mostly assumed death rattle up to this point. How did the weekend strike you?
You know, I'm sure that we'll talk a little bit more about what's going on with Bellator later in the show, but for me, something was very perfectly captured in the fight-ending call where in the fight between Liz Carmouche and Alima Leigh McFarlane, which already ended up as a weird situation, yeah. One of those fights where only one fighter can win the title. It's only a title fight for one person. The other person, Alima Leigh McFarlane, missed weight, ineligible to win the title. And, you know, the way she went down off of the leg kick to bring about the ending of the fight and the call, was it Mauro Ranallo there on the call where the fight ending call was just sort of like, well, and that's it. Which, you know, it was a weird ending, so I understand that tone seeping in there, but it also felt like you might as well just apply that to where mm-hmm. Bellator is at right now.
Like sort of a Mauro Ranallo soundboard that as soon as they say Bellator's done, you just push it and he says, well, that's it.
Yeah, especially because it's not necessarily going out with a big bang or dramatic fireworks at the end. It's sort of, hey, we've been hearing for months now that you guys are on the block looking for a buyer. And Bellator kind of just been saying, not exactly hell no, which, as we've talked about before, is a little bit of a tell. Because yeah. If you really did intend to keep doing business and people are constantly asking you, really, we hear you're for sale. We hear that you guys are going out of business. We hear that it's almost over. You'd be like, shut up, you guys. We are here to stay. You'll never get rid of Bellator. You wait for all the great, exciting things we have in store. And instead, the answer was just sort of like, no comment for now.
Yeah.
Which tells you, Yeah, nobody expects to be doing this for too much longer.
Well, they got one more show on the books if they make it another month and change to Bellator 301, which has some pretty decent fights on it. But maybe we'll talk about that coming up later in the show. Just remember, you're listening to the Co-Main Event Podcast proper. This show drops every Monday afternoon for free in your timelines and your podcast libraries. But if you can't get enough over here, you can find the Co-Main Event, Ben Folks, and myself all week long over on Patreon. You can hit us up at patreon.com/co-main-event and get loads of extra content, both of the audio and the video variety. On top of that, you get access to our official Discord message board. The coolest people in MMA are over there chatting it up every day of the week. Any number of topics available on the Discord message board, MMA and otherwise. If that sounds good, but maybe you're not totally sold and you're wondering what the Patreon is really all about, the good news is, right now, you can sign up for a 7-day free trial over at what would be the $5 level. It's a great chance to check out a week's worth of the content and decide if it's for you and you want to take the plunge to sign up for real. As we always say, we can only keep making the show with support from our awesome listeners. There it is. Come party with us. We think it's the funnest, smartest, most welcoming group of men and women talking fights online. Head over to patreon.com/co-main-event and sign up to join the team. You can also consider supporting the show by buying some dope CME merchandise. Just head on over to our brand new merch shop. You'll find lots of stuff over there. Old favorites like the original Dundasso t-shirt, the old school cowboy astronaut cigarettes t-shirt, and a lot of new stuff too. You can find the Are You Fucking Kidding Me shirts, official shirts of the dreaded MMA gods. We got the hottest seller on the market, the Bobby Nux t-shirt. And some new stuff, some even newer stuff. We got Volcamania t-shirts that are flying off the shelves over there as well. Just go to our website, comainevent.com, and click the link at the top of the page that says shop. As always, we're partnering with our guys over at Superconductor on the shop. Superconductor is a brand and design studio. You've seen their work on the CME for a long time, and you just didn't know it. We can't recommend them highly enough for all your design needs. Hit them up at studiosuperconductor.com or Studio Superconductor on Instagram. We got music this week from our guys Foreign Cash. Remember that C-A-C-H-E. They're an LA-based production duo. If you like what you hear from them on the show, you can check out more of their stuff at foreigncash.bandcamp.com or soundcloud.com/foreigncash. We're really pleased to be able to share their music with you this week. And of course, C-A-C-H-E in Foreign Cash. Three rounds, as usual, this week in the Co-Main Event Podcast. In round number one, whoopsies, Grant Dawson gets KO'd by Bobby Green in 33 seconds. And in round number two, Bellator 300 was absolutely a thing that happened. And afterwards, Scotty Coakes finally confirmed that an effort to buy Bellator is underway, but did it in the most Scotty Coakes way possible. And in round number three, Conor McGregor might be on the verge of getting back into the USADA testing pool, but Dana White says, quote, "I literally have nothing planned for Conor McGregor right now." I don't believe you. All that plus are you fucking kidding me and just saying stuff. But first, like we always do about this time, let's do a little bit of listener mail.
Listener mail.
First piece of listener mail this week comes to us from Chris Kirk over on Patreon. He writes, "Is Ryan Bader the person who stands to lose the most by Bellator shutting down? Without the last 6 years of beating a range of semi-retired heavyweights, would he have long since faded into obscurity? Even at light heavyweight, he might have beat Phil Davis, but then lost to every other live body he faced in Bellator. What would Bader's legacy be without Bellator's novelty heavyweight title? Love you both equally. And up the Clarets." Is that a soccer reference?
Probably.
Probably so. All right. So Ryan Bader kind of spilled the tea last week, as we talked about on a couple of our shows. His fight with Linton Vassell at Bellator 300 got canceled, according to an illness to Linton Vassell. And Ryan Bader got on his Instagram. He started making a video about how sad he was about it. I believe it was Corey Anderson jumped on there and was like, "Hey, let's get together. I can save this fight." Ryan Bader then replied, "Can't do it." I'm paraphrasing. He said, "I can't do it because Viacom is getting out of the MMA business this month. end of October, I believe he said, and they're saving money by not booking me this fight. So Ryan Bader appeared to confirm that the Bellator sale is going to happen possibly by the end of this month, and that perhaps Bellator will be no more. Now, I see a certain kind of logic in saying that Ryan Bader has a lot to lose if Bellator goes away. It certainly provided him with like a lengthy last act of his career. He went over there in June of 2017, and he's, you know, the heavyweight champion over there to this day. He's won all of his fights but two, and like, you know, made a nice little career over there for himself. In fact, didn't even exit the UFC on a terrible losing streak. He only lost to Anthony Johnson, Glover Teixeira, Lyoto Machida, Tito Ortiz, which was a bad one, and John Jones. But other than that, he beat everybody that he fought in the UFC. I don't know where we're getting off trying to make it seem like Ryan Bader is terrible. I don't think he's terrible. I also don't think he's, you know, would be the champion of the UFC in either of these divisions. But let's not get carried away here, giving Ryan Bader the shaft. The other thing that I will say is that Ryan Bader could be hurt by the end of Bellator, but let's say he makes it over to the PFL, and I don't want to keep talking about the $2 million, but Ryan Bader would be in a pretty good position to get the $2 million, Ben. He could be one of the guys considered to get that $2 million.
Oh, come now. You are not going to sit here and suggest that a Francis Ngannou Ryan Bader fight would be the thing that PFL would want to do, that that's the business they'd want to be in.
Even if he does a bad job, they get to give him that $2 million.
Can you imagine the collective groan from the MMA sphere if we finally get Francis Ngannou back in an MMA fight? Say it goes over, we get the boxing match with Tyson Fury, and it goes about like we all think it's going to go. And then we console ourselves by saying, well, he's an MMA fighter, though. Wait until he comes back into the cage with the little gloves, gets up in the smart cage. The PFL, we're going to see him do his thing where he really belongs. And then they say, and it's going to be Francis Ngannou versus Ryan Bader. And we all go, oh, God damn it. But
well, yeah, the ultimate fate of that $2 million could come down to who's out there. I mean, yes. If not Ryan Bader, then who?
Here's what I'll say, though, to the question of, does Ryan Bader stand to lose more than anybody if Bellator is no more? Ryan Bader is 40, right? He's 40, and when he did exit the UFC, you're right, it's not like he got drummed out of there because he was terrible or anything. I mean, he left the UFC on a two-fight winning streak, so, you know, he was doing okay. But also, we had seen that Ryan Bader was probably not going to become champion in the UFC. And then he gets to go over to Bellator, not only, you know, keep going to work and keep getting paid over there in the cage, but he gets to become a two-division champion over there in Bellator. If this is it, if Bellator shuts down and Ryan Bader goes, well, okay, that was a nice chapter post the UFC for me in MMA, and now it's over. Brother, he's still ahead of the game. He did all right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, things worked out for him pretty well in Bellator. And regardless, even if Bellator were to continue, again, Ryan Bader's 40. He's been at this for a long-ass time. You know, it's not like he was going to do this indefinitely either way. So I don't know if it would be... Like, you know who... The people who I think... this could be a blessing in disguise for them, or it could be a bad thing, are some of the younger fighters where Bellator was excited about them, wanted to make them a focal point. Guys like AJ McKee, stuff like that. I mean, they're going to get some good offers, I'm sure. But you won't get the same good offer like maybe a Michael Chandler got, where he had been Bellator's guy and then made the jump to the UFC at a time when the UFC was like, okay, we're interested in acquiring this guy as a free agent. And that's when you get that big jump up in money. And a lot of those guys who had been kind of positioned as Bellator's homegrown talent, they're very excited to have these people. They want to make them, you know, a star. They want to shine the spotlight on them. And if Bellator sort of just quietly goes away, you lose some of that. You lose it as negotiating leverage when you do hit the free agent market. That's the guys where I wonder, the guys who have more tomorrows than yesterdays in this sport. And that ain't really Ryan Bader at this point.
Man, I would argue that those young guys have the most to gain.
Yeah, but I mean, you're gonna end up in a situation essentially where it's the UFC and PFL, right?
Yeah.
Like, because that's who's left, pretty much. And the UFC might just kind of look at you and go like, oh, okay, you don't want to take our lowball offer? Well, then whatever the PFL is offering you is what you get paid.
Yeah.
And instead of it being a Bellator trying to re-sign you when you're at the end of a contract, the UFC trying to sign you, maybe a third organization trying to sign you, I think that those are the guys that, that's how you get a sudden huge jump up in money.
Sure.
And I don't know if you quite get the same thing this way.
Yeah, I suppose you're right. It could be a monetarily bad move for them, but at least some of these guys would get to fight somewhere where people might see them, and that's that could be considered good. Don't you think it would be a bad look for the UFC if, maybe they don't care, obviously they don't care, but like if Bellator suddenly folds and AJ McKee and Aaron Pico and Johnny Eblen and the Pitbull brothers and Patchy Mix and Sergio Pettis all go to the PFL, and we don't even know, you know, if there would be a free agency period, maybe their contracts, existing contracts, just go to the PFL anyway. But let's say that those guys somehow in the sale become free agents. Wouldn't we all kind of look out the corner of our eye at the UFC and be like, what you guys doing, man? What are you doing if you let all those possibly like top tier MMA fighters go to PFL?
The moment they let Francis Ngannou walk as heavyweight champion is the moment I think the ruse was abandoned. That the UFC is still in that business where they think we got to get our checkbook out and negotiate to make sure that we get the best fighters in the world. I think that that period is over in their eyes, that they look at it and go, hey, you want to pay a bunch of money and get these guys and see if you can make a run at the top spot? You go for it. We'll be over here churning out contender series fighters, betting on penny stocks, and just running a show every weekend. I don't think that they... We will raise eyebrows and go like, oh, what, the UFC doesn't care about any of these guys? The UFC doesn't want to get in the market and try to sign at least a few of them? And maybe they will sign a few of them. I mean, you know how MMA fighters are too. Some of them are going to make it just pure dollars and cents and say, whoever offers me the better deal, that's where I'm going. But you know some of those Bellator guys are going to come out of there if they do get a free agency period and say, I've wanted to be in the UFC for a while. I've wanted to stop having conversations with strangers at parties and on airplanes where I have to explain what I do by saying, okay, so you know the UFC? It's not that exactly, but it's like that. That still carries some cachet with some MMA fighters out there. So, you know, I'm sure that if there's a flood of those guys hitting the market, the UFC will scoop up some of them. But I would not be surprised if the UFC says we're not interested in really getting into a bidding war over Aaron Pico or over Johnny Eblen or some of those guys, that if PFL wants to spend a bunch of money and buy them all up, we are content to let PFL feel like they're winning that part of the arms race and see if they can keep spending at that level, because we are churning out cash this way.
Next question this week comes to us from Matthew Ryder on Patreon. He asks, doesn't it increasingly feel like Noche was the only event Dana has watched in possibly years? Time to do a yearly special event? Noche inspired it. Judging is a fiasco? Saw it at Noche. We're going to the Sphere? We're bringing a motherfucking Noche show. You're softer than shit flag-hating ass is mad that flags are back? Noche was when the boss realized it was time. Now, I did think this was weird about the Sphere.
Yeah.
It crossed my mind last week when Dana White was so excited about the new multi-billion dollar event venue in Vegas, the Sphere. So excited he went to see U2 with Tom Brady, BT Dubs.
I mean, if you want to get an okay boomer out of me, tell me how excited you were to go see fucking U2 with Tom Brady.
Yeah. It was odd to me that the first thing that came to his mind was UFC Noche. Not that UFC Noche is not a big deal. Not that it wasn't a cool thing that the UFC did this year. It was like maybe the only cool thing the UFC did this year that was out of the ordinary. I think that's great if that's what they wanted to do it. But I was sort of like, well, I mean, you do have a lot of other kind of big events that traditionally are on the calendar, all of which seem like they are going to happen before the next UFC Noche. You know, sometimes you have a big Super Bowl show. Sometimes you have the International Fight Week, the first or second week of July. Used to have a big New Year's Eve show. Now, maybe not so much. It just seems like you'd have a lot of opportunities to get in there. Maybe it's a date issue. I don't know. But it was a little odd to me that Dana White came out and said immediately UFC Noche over there at the Sphere.
I think Matthew Ryder makes a good point, and maybe it's not that this is the first one he's watched, but it does seem like one he got uncommonly excited about, which maybe is a good thing, because as you point out, this was one of the few events where the UFC deviated, if only slightly, from its normal pretty cookie cutter approach to these events and said, okay, let's do something different with a little bit of a different theme, a little bit of a different vibe. And what if you go and you do that? The response from fans is really positive. We all really liked it. And then the UFC president goes, oh shit, wait a minute. You're telling me we could still make a bunch of money and do some different stuff, do some fun stuff. And even he will end up having a good time. And maybe that's just what needed to happen for him to realize it, that you don't have to just do the same thing every time. You could get a little more creative. It is interesting, though, that it's the message he seems to have taken out of it was that he can't wait for the next Noche, where you're right. Like, there are a lot of opportunities to do some cool other stuff, and you don't have to wait a whole year for the next Noche opportunity to come around. You could do some of this other stuff. The flag thing, him tying that to the Noche UFC event, was strange to me. Because, especially the way he phrased that whole thing about announcing that the flag ban is over, he acted like it was something we wanted. Like it was our idea, like everybody else. The way he phrased it, where he was like, look, you know, I saw it at the Mexican Independence Day show. I was like, you know, that's when it really got to me. I was like, we need to bring the flags back. I'm sorry if a flag hurts your feelings, you know, whatever. Like, we don't care. We're bringing the flags back. And it's like, my man, we never were the ones who got mad at you about it. Like, the fans weren't like, the UFC must ban fighters from bringing flags. The media wasn't like, how dare the UFC keep allowing fighters to bring flags? None of us said anything about it. You guys made the decision to ban flags. And then when people asked you, why did you ban the flags? You said, you know why. That's what he said when the flags were first banned, and acted like it's unreasonable for people to keep asking, like, hey, why can't people bring the flags back in there anymore? And then he's going to turn around and act like it was somebody else's idea, and we're just a bunch of big babies who insisted on not seeing flags in the UFC. You did it. It was your idea. And now you're reversing it. So just fucking own that. It's like he really depends on us having our memories wiped every 15 minutes.
Well, I can't wait to see who gets their feelings hurt when the pride and the trans rights flags start showing up in the UFC.
Or maybe when somebody who has a fight booked up coming up pretty recently shows up with a Palestinian flag, and then we can see whose feelings it is really that we were worried about, because it doesn't seem like the fans are like, hey, bring whatever flags you want. And you know, MMA fighters, there are going to be some people who bring some like separatist flags or flags that we've never seen before or whatever. But the UFC can't have it both ways. You can't be like, hey, we're the organization where you get to say whatever and do whatever you want, and then act like it was us who were like shocked and appalled at flags. No, man. You never heard an MMA fan in your life be like, the UFC needs to do something about these flags. We spent years looking at Condom Depot on people's asses. You think there's any flag of any nation, any movement, any single like entity that is going to make MMA fans upset? There is not.
Next question this week comes to us from Darkwing Duck, who writes, I know Ben Folks is excited that his MMA crush object, Drew Dober, got a win by TKOing Ricky Glenn at this fight night after getting TKO'd by Matt Frivola his last time out. Two questions. One, what is Dober's ceiling at lightweight? And two, just before the fight, John Gooden called him Drew Daddy Dober, I think because Dober recently had a child. But did my man JG stumble upon the perfect nickname for Drew? Triple D Drew Daddy Dober. What do you think, Ben?
Okay. Folks? Yes, Drew Dober did recently become a father. You saw his tiny, tiny baby at this one. Also, since I follow him on the grams, I was well aware of his family welcoming a child. I also found it interesting, I think it was Drew Dober, before the baby was born, he was on, I think, Twitter being like, people who are like, who train and who are parents, how long do you think after the baby's born can I get back in the gym and get into a training camp? And some of the most sober and reasonable responses I saw came from women in the space who definitely like train or in jiu-jitsu or into MMA and everything, and who are like, you might not realize it, but what you're really asking is how soon can you leave her with the entirety of the responsibility for the duration of a fight camp? Because that's really what the question is.
Right.
Anyway, you know, I must have felt like enough time had passed. He got back in training here, got back, looked great in the win. The thing about the daddy nickname, mm-hmm. I immediately thought of Joe Daddy Stevenson.
Okay.
Yeah. We've already had a daddy in MMA, but the key part is, if you want people to jump on board that nickname with you, is that Joe Daddy didn't go by daddy. It was the nickname was daddy, but people, his friends, commentators, media people, fans, they would call him Joe Daddy. Mm-hmm. You notice even in his role on the MMA show Kingdom, he was referred to as Joe Daddy, not daddy, because you're going to make a lot of people uncomfortable if you're walking around and expecting them to call you daddy. But Joe Daddy is just fun. So if he's going to do it, you know, he got to be Drew Daddy. Mm-hmm. We can't just be out here Daddy Dober, you know, like that's not.
I don't think you can call a man as good looking as Drew Dober daddy in any context without it starting to take on an unseemly feel. Right.
Well, it's only unseemly unless you guys are both into it, I guess. But
whatever. I don't want to shame anybody, but Drew Daddy Dober is, people are going to have thoughts.
Drew Daddy, I think, could work, though. He comes.
What do you see as Drew Dober's ceiling at the 155 pounds? You know, as Darkwing Duck notes here, he had been on a 3-fight win streak before he lost to Matt Frivola, gets back with a TKO over Ricky Glenn, where he looked really good, frankly, in that fight. And so, I don't know. I don't know what to think about Drew Dober. He's 34, so it's not like he's totally a spring chicken, as we always talk about, and I believe we will talk about some more coming up in round one. Lightweight is crowded, is a shark tank. There are some usual suspects who suck up a lot of the oxygen in the room, so it's hard to break into that top tier. You know, Drew Dober seems to me like a solid middle to upper middle of the pack guy who's going to show up and have exciting fights on fight night events and perhaps UFC pay-per-view main cards.
Yeah, and I think that that's honestly a really solid place for him to be, because you're right, in that division where, damn, there's so many good people. To be in a kind of sweet spot where you're known as an action fighter who people like, who people, just a name we recognize on the fight card, the UFC needs those kind of people to help fill out fight cards like this. Also, I mean, it's kind of a bit of hidden UFC trivia almost to be like, who has the record like among UFC lightweights for most knockouts in UFC history? It's fucking Drew Dober. Like that's a Jeopardy question that even a lot of people who think they're hardcore MMA fans might not get, you know? Like that's kind of a good spot for you to be in and hang around and keep making some money. I think if you get up into a situation where, you know, you're running around talking about how you want that rematch with Islam Makhachev, I'm like, well, I don't know if that's a great idea, but to hang around and keep knocking out the Ricky Glenns of the world, that's good work as long as you can get it.
Yeah. Next question this week from the Philly Fanatic, who writes, Joe Pyfer, stand up. So you saw this, right? Joe Pyfer goes out there, kind of wore Abdul Razak El Hassan around the cage like a hat for 1.5 rounds before putting him to sleep with an arm triangle choke. Can you really allow someone as big as Joe Pyfer to be in the middleweight division? I think there ought to be a law. I think there ought to be a law against it, because he's out there just dwarfing this man, dwarfing his opponent out there, and kind of ragdolled him around the cage a few times. So great all-around performance by Joe Pyfer. Someone get this man a Wikipedia page already.
Yeah. Yeah, what's it going to take? How would you like to see this law enforced that would keep Joe Pyfer out of the middleweight division? Because he's making middleweight.
Yeah. You know how John Jones used to tape off the dimensions of his opponent on the wall of his apartment so he could see how big he was? I say we come up with like a maximum size and we tape that off on the wall at the UFC Performance Center, and we have guys come stand up against it. If you're bigger than the taped off body, you're too big. You gotta go do something else.
Okay. And for you, the cutoff point would be half an inch shorter than Joe Pyfer?
Yeah. We'll tape it off a little bit smaller. Joe Pyfer, he has to be at 195.
I mean, he looked great in this fight, looked great standing up, looked good once it got to the mat. What do you make of the tap, Abdul Razak Al-Hassan's tap? Because normally I know we're ready to jump on referees for missing a tap, missing something like that. But it's like this one, we've seen plenty of people do the thing where they're stuck in a choke and they're, for lack of a better idea, are trying to just punch the other guy. Mm-hmm. And then the punch will go to a tap, or the punching arm will just go limp. And here, it seemed like maybe he was trying to tap, but he was doing it with the knuckles of his fist, which that's going to read as a punch, you know?
Yeah. Cruiserweight. Joe Pyfer. Cruiserweight. That's not how you tap. I think Paul Felder said that on the broadcast. Like, it's not how you tap, dude. I don't think I've ever seen anybody tap like that before. And I've been watching these fights for a long time, so you can understand why it would take the referee a second to figure out that that was a tap and maybe he was asleep and it was time to jump in there and stop the fight. I don't know why you would tap that way. It's not like the fingers were unavailable, you know?
Yes,
you could open the hand and tap. You could open the hand and tap, and that would probably work out. So, yeah, that was very strange. That was one of the stranger small moments that I've seen in the cage for a while.
Yeah.
Let's see here. What do we got? We can, we could do this one about Bellator, but we're going to talk about them coming up in round number two. So maybe we'll just call it there this week.
Wait, we're not going to hear from the CME's political reporter in the Netherlands?
Oh, now you're asking me to skip way down on the list. Let's see, where are we at here? From the CME's political reporter from the Netherlands, he writes, Alistair Overeem leaves his martial times behind him and gets into politics. At the upcoming election in the Netherlands in November of this year, he joins the electoral list of a small political party. He's not on a place on the list where it's realistic that he could be elected, so it's basically just a marketing move from both sides. But still, this party, however, is the kind that would have voted McCarthy away. Anti-migration, anti-vaccine, anti-science, anti-government, you guys know the type. I've always been surprised by the strong connection of the radical right wing and martial arts. Do you guys have an explanation? The days of fighters playing bodyguards for celebrities are behind us. Or, and I'm throwing shade here, are brain damage and short-term view on the world somehow related? I don't know. We need to go quite that far there at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, plenty of fighters and pro athletes seem to go pretty hard right wing without there being any brain damage, you know, so they don't need to wait until they've suffered a career's worth of brain trauma to go that route. There does seem to be something, though, between the fighter personality and a certain sort of political bent.
Yeah, you know, I have a long-standing theory that I've weighed on this show before, and so I will weigh it again. I don't know if this is true. This could be complete bullshit, but my theory is that the conservative mindset is more interested in personal defense than a lot of other people. And so it stands to reason that people with that mindset who are into personal defense would be into both firearm defense and hand-to-hand combat self-defense. And so maybe there is a larger proportion of those people that get drawn into wrestling and jiu-jitsu and boxing, kickboxing, mixed martial arts, especially now that the largest purveyor of mixed martial arts in the world itself has taken a hard right-hand turn over the last 4 or 5 years. I don't know if that's true, but that's just my theory on it.
Yeah, I think there's probably at least some part of that theory. I think probably there's no one answer for why it is the way it is. It's interesting, though, how many fighters seem to go immediately toward, well, fighting career is over. Could I be some kind of like political figurehead? Is it like a lot of them we've seen, and not just in MMA, some boxers too, and in several different countries where they just kind of go like, I don't know if I necessarily want to do politics, but like, could I just be a guy in politics?
Yeah.
And you need look no further than former Huntington Beach mayor, Tito Ortiz, who quickly discovered that he really liked the job of running for office way more than he did the job of holding office. Because he was all about how much shit you got to talk when you were on the campaign trail and just say all kinds of crazy shit all the time. He loved that part of it. And then when he actually won the election and was in there and found out how much shit you have to eat when you are a politician who actually holds the office and now has responsibility and people expect you to do things and, you know, show up to the fucking meetings every time, then he was like, this ain't for me. And he pieced up out of there real quick inside of one term. So maybe that should be a little bit of a word of warning to some of these fighters.
Yeah, it might look better from the outside than on the inside. In any case, that's going to do it for listener mail this week. If you have a question, comment, or concern to air to the podcast in future weeks, you know how to do it. Go to the website, comainevent.com. Click the link at the top right-hand corner of the screen that says email the podcast. That'll get you in touch with us. As for right now, though, we are going to go ahead and get started with round number one.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, Ben, after it was over, they ended up showing the fight twice in real time on the UFC broadcast, which is never good. Bobby Green goes out there, KOs Grant Dawson with a straight left hand 33 seconds into the first round. This fight was basically set up as a showcase fight for Grant Dawson, the 29-year-old prospect, against the 37-year-old veteran in Bobby Green. Grant Dawson came in as the minus 500 favorite. He was ranked number 10 in the world at lightweight. And now look what has become of him. He's been knocked out by Bobby Green. Pretty tough night all the way around for your guy, Grant Dawson.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a tough one. I'll just say right off the bat, this does not give less credence to my theory that MMA is dumb to bet on, because you come into this one, you look at this one on paper, you look at what the UFC seems to be thinking here, you look at what odds makers seem to be thinking, and you go, this looks like it's supposed to be the next rung on Grant Dawson's ladder up the division. And one left hand, just one well-placed left hand, and it's a whole different story. I was a little bit interested afterwards when I saw Bobby Green making these comments where he said, you know, I think he just made the mistake of thinking he could come out here and stand with me. And I was expecting to be in a 25-minute grind of a fight, and instead, you know, him thinking that he could stand with me was the mistake that cost him this fight. And I was like, okay, granted, I mean, you did catch him with a nice punch there while you guys were standing. Also, though, it was the 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Like, are you saying that the mistake he made was not walking out to the center of the cage and immediately shooting for a takedown? Like, that he went out there and threw some punches at all? Because he came out there, Grant Dawson was looking like he wanted to throw pretty hard right off the bat. And you could see Bobby Green barely even putting his hands up, as he likes to do defensively, just sort of like moving and slipping, and then he kind of gave him a nod like, oh, okay, so we're doing that, and then landed that one clean left hand. It wasn't even a whole lot to it. It was, you know, it didn't look like it was all that much when it landed. It just landed just right, and that's all it takes sometimes.
Happened so fast, Bobby Green didn't even know which hand he hit him with.
Neither did Daniel Cormier. Daniel Cormier was like, I'm not getting in there to talk to him until I could see a replay. He couldn't tell what happened.
So, you know, Bobby Green can be a tricky guy to fight, I think. As you mentioned, he's out there with his hands down, kind of moving around, slipping punches, changing stances. And I think, you know, on any given night, he can catch a guy and put him to sleep. Grant Dawson was out there going for his 12th win in a row. Obviously, he does not get it. And now probably, well, almost certainly slips down at least the official rankings and the prospect list. And it reminds me, Ben, that it can be a perilous place out here in MMA to be one of these up-and-coming prospects because, you know, the UFC will only bring you along so far before they toss you in there with a step up in competition, as I think is the right thing to do in this sport. We're not used to seeing guys have as lengthy career arc as, say, in boxing, where guys can get out there and be like 32-1 before they take on any real tough competition. But it feels to me like we've seen a number of guys lately try to make that jump and be unsuccessful. And I think when you have that unsuccessful night like Grant Dawson did, especially at lightweight, man, where it is, as we always say, so crowded and so many people jockeying for position, trying to make that elite group of title contenders, it's going to take him a while to work his way back, I think.
Yeah, it is. And especially because when we've seen you sort of come up sort of gradually against people who were either not terribly well known or not terribly well regarded, and then they match you up against somebody where it seems like, okay, we know the name, but we also got the sense that he was closer to the end than the beginning.
Yeah.
And it feels a familiar kind of dynamic that we're used to seeing in MMA and in the UFC, where we take the older guy who still has a little bit of shine on his name and we get that shine to rub off on the younger guy who we're more excited about his future. And then you put them in that fight together and it doesn't go that way. The younger guy who seemed like he was being set up for success there takes a real hit, because it's where you go down from there. Like, then, you know, you're in the next one fighting somebody back more in the realm of who you were facing on the way up here. And you're also doing it, we've seen this happen too, where you go back to that sort of lower echelon of fight and opponent. You know, you went from main eventing a fight night to the next one's probably not going to be a main event. And we've seen a lot of fighters get in their heads about it, because then they show up to that next one going, well, I can't lose this one. You know, really got to win this one. Mm-hmm. And the next thing you know, we've seen some people get on some precipitous drops that way, just because they psychologically sort of psych themselves out.
Both these guys have been relatively active. Grant Dawson came in a little bit more than 3 months removed from his last fight. This is Bobby Green's third fight in 2023. He started off the year with that no contest against Jared Gordon after the clash of heads, and he came back, beat Tony Ferguson in July, and now he beats Grant Dawson in October. So he is 2-0-1 this year. He has won performance of the night or fight of the night bonuses in three of his last four fights. The only one he didn't get one for was that Jared Gordon fight that ended just before the end of the first round. He says he wants to fight again in December. So he wants to be the most active fighter on the roster, which, again, as we always say, it's risky, right? It's a risky and perhaps not the healthiest way to go, but it's also a guy you can be. You can be that guy in the UFC, and sometimes it leads to some job security. And if you're Bobby Green and you're out here cashing those extra $50,000 checks more often than not, maybe it makes sense to you to go that route.
Well, also the big question coming out of this, and that Bobby Green gets a big win here, will the newest hot training regimen for MMA fighters be smoking 15 blunts a day?
He did say that. He did tell Rampage Jackson that on a podcast last week. And you and I talked about this on the Power Hour over on the Patreon page. It's not good when Rampage Jackson is giving you health advice, man. When you say something to Rampage Jackson and he's like, you do what? That's unhealthy. Like, that's, you should reevaluate if that's where you get with Rampage Jackson.
Also, what happened to Bobby Green? He was changing his name officially to King, right?
Yeah.
Like, what happened there?
Well, it's still his nickname, right? And then had the play-by-play guy, John Gooden, on this thing was calling him Bobby King during the fight, which, I frankly, Bobby King has a better ring to it to me than just calling yourself King or calling yourself King Green. Bobby King, you know who that is in this sport. If somebody says Bobby King now, right? I don't know about just being one name, Madonna, Prince style King.
I mean, here, this was the story from April, I found this via a link on his Wikipedia page. You'll remember this when I tell you how he had told people before his fight in April, the one Jared Gordon, that he was going to be retiring after that fight, and then announced afterwards that when he said he was going to be retiring, what he meant is Bobby Green was going to be retiring and he was going to be changing his name to King, and that he would have done it sooner, but he didn't have the money to go through with it because he was up in some child custody cases and things of that nature that he had to spend money on lawyers for. But now he could do it. And we opined at the time, imagine how pissed off you would be if you were one of his friends who took it seriously when he told you he was going to be retiring, only to later learn that it was all a trick and that he meant he was just changing his name. Anyway, this is a story from April 18th, 2023. Bobby Green clarifies retirement talk, reveals he'll just go by King after UFC Vegas 71. Quote, I'm going to be changing my name. Well, here we are, Chad.
Yeah.
It's October 2023. Where are we at on this? You can't leave me hanging. I need an update.
Do you think potentially the lack of stick-to-itiveness on the whole name change and the 15 blunts a day could be related?
You know, now that you say it.
Yeah.
Now that you're connecting some dots for me.
Yeah, I've known some multiple blunt in a day guys, and I have never, you know, they're more idea guys than they are follow through guys, generally speaking. Okay.
Now, you know, now that you're making some solid points, I'm starting to think that there could be a connection.
Potentially. All right, let's go ahead. We'll do Are You Fucking Kidding Me? And then we'll move on to round number two. Ben, what's your Are You Fucking Kidding Me this week?
Chad, I don't know if you saw this story. James Lynch posted this video to his YouTube page about being at Bellator over the weekend and getting into it, as apparently he has before in the past with everybody's favorite scumbag MMA manager, Ali Abdelaziz, who, according to James Lynch, sends like one of his guys over there, one of the managers who works for him, to at the Bellator event where, you know, he's got his camera set up, he's credentialed by Bellator, he's out there, and they don't want him to talk to their guy so much that they come over there, Chad, and tell him, hey, at the press conference, you better not ask our guy any questions. At a fucking press conference.
Yeah.
Where he's a credentialed member of the media. And for one thing, are you fucking kidding me? You going to do this at a Bellator event? You got a guy over there in Bellator where the whole ship is going down here pretty soon. All those guys are going to need some new homes. If things are going well for your guy over there in Bellator, you want some media attention because he's going to be looking for a contract soon in all likelihood. And you're going to go over there and be like, don't you dare ask our guy any questions. And it's not like James Lynch's thing is being controversial. I mean, we've seen some of these people who try to make their way in MMA media by like, I'm going to stand up at a press conference and just be a jackass. And that's not his deal. He plays it pretty straight, man. Like, really uncontroversial and really pretty professional in all ways. And then you're going to pick on that guy at a time when you should be glad that there are still people showing up to Bellator events with cameras? Are you fucking kidding me? But also, are you fucking kidding me that Ali Abdelaziz is still just doing this kind of shit? When, man, at some point, your fighters might get smart enough to look around and go, wait a minute, why is my manager trying to get me less media attention? Why am I paying this guy a cut of my money so that he can keep reporters from asking me about my successes? Like, it's an opportunity if you talk about how awesome you've just been at this fight. And instead, you know, the guy's just saying, like, don't talk to my guy at a press conference where the whole reason he's there is for members of the press to ask him questions. Are you fucking kidding me? What's the thinking there? And I'll tell you, I'm going to take it a step further, Chad. I'll tell you, you know what those fighters would say in response to that? They would say, well, the reason he's a good manager is because of the opportunities he gets me. And why does he get you those opportunities? Because of his relationships with the promoters. Maybe think a little bit more about that part of it. Because do you think he's getting these good, cozy relationships with the promoters because he does such a good job advocating on behalf of his fighters and getting them the best possible pay and treatment? You think so? You fucking kidding me?
Fucking kidding me.
This guy continues to be a barnacle on the hub of MMA.
Was there an or what in this scenario? Is this like a physical threat? Were they like, don't ask our guy any questions? Did anybody be like, or what? Were they like, well, this will be the end of you?
In this video, James Lynn says that's the same guy who was sent over there. He said he tried to intimidate him at the backstage at the Bellator event, and that the same guy had threatened earlier on Twitter to slap him in the face if he saw him. So that's the level of professionalism we're dealing with from MMA managers out here.
Huh.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Fucking kidding me indeed. Well, Ben, there's quite the bromance going on right now between John Jones and Gordon Ryan. We had Gordon Ryan, by the way, show up at a recent grappling match with a damn mystery box containing a pre-written prediction of how his fight was going to go, how his match was going to go, and how he was going to win. And he was right.
Yeah.
Now he's out there helping John Jones get ready for Stipe Miocic, and these guys have been posting pics together and posting little compliments about each other and nice things about each other. You had... John Jones post, my boy Gordon Ryan served me up a large hot piece of humble pie tonight. It's exactly what I was looking for. At the same time, my emotions were all messed up. Going to have a hard time sleeping tonight. Expect singing videos at 2 a.m. And then he goes on, training with a 28-year-old phenom to fight a 41-year-old goat. I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be. Then, as Bloody Elbow noticed here, Gordon Ryan jumps on the Instagram. And does he perhaps spoil John Jones's special night by accident here? By maybe tipping us off that John Jones might be planning a retirement after the Stipe Miocic fight? He says, another few days of work with the man Johnny Bones. I'm looking forward to watching him put on a show for the fans and getting ready to soon after leave the sport at the top on his terms and unbeaten. What an honor to be part of this camp. You fucking kidding me? Did you say too much? Did you get blinded by the bromance and you said too much? I don't know, man. You know John Jones does not react well to people spoiling his special night. We know that already. So this, he might have gone too far here. He might have said too much.
I mean, I don't know how big a surprise this one is, how badly you're spoiling anything. Because, again, I'll say it for maybe the 100th time. In this very space, I absolutely believe John Jones, if he wins against Stipe, will stand there, put 10 toes in the ground, look us in our eyes, and tell us he is done. And I 100% believe that it won't be true. He will not be able to stick to it.
Oh, can you imagine when they put the belt on someone else and they're tweeting about mm-hmm. how he's the best light heavy? Oh, John Jones won't be able to stand that. Hey, man, I'm just saying... If Gordon Ryan shows up at UFC 295 with a mystery box, and perhaps inside written on a card is that John Jones will retire after this fight, you heard it here first. That's all I'm saying.
Also, is Gordon Ryan 28?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to tell with the whole keeps his hair and beard dyed
the silver
gray
hair
all the time.
That'll really throw you, man.
Yeah, that's not natural, though. I don't know. You're the one. You're the co-main events Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu correspondent. You're the one who has to get us answers on how old Gordon Ryan is, not me.
Don't worry. I'm on the case.
Great. That's going to do it for round number one. We'll be right back with round number two.
Well, Chad, you recall that when Scott Coker was asked last week about the state of Bellator and whether it will continue as its own entity amid all these rumors of a sale or even sometimes rumors that it would just plain shut down. He told us he didn't think it was right to take attention away from the fighters on Bellator 300 by talking about those issues, but after the event, he'd sit down at the press conference and he would tell you anything you want to know, answer all the questions you got about Bellator's future. Now, listeners of some of our Patreon properties, where we call that, we cast a little bit of doubt on that just knowing Scott Coker that we do, we did not necessarily see a future in which Scott Coker showed up on Saturday night at the press conference and said, okay, look, I'm going to level with you, and laid it all out on the table. Here's what he had to say.
Yeah.
Because, you know, once you tell people, hey, I'll answer all the questions you've got at this point. When you get to that point, those questions are coming. So post-fight press conference, Scott Coker sits down and says, first of all, I don't know if you remember what I said, how this quote was going to begin, but here's how it begins. Listen.
Yeah.
I think this is exactly what I said.
It's not your rodeo with Scott Coker.
Listen, 2 weeks ago, it was like, oh, this thing's going down in a week. A month ago, it was the same. This thing's been going back and forth for how long? For the last 6 months? And so to me, I don't want to really engage in any speculation or see where the future goes as far as, is a deal going to happen? Is it not going to happen? These things take time, and until the time gets solidified, to me, it's just speculation. So I can't engage with that because it's really unfair, I think, to the promotion, to the 300th event. We had some great fights tonight. We've been doing some great fights over the last, let's say, 8-9 years, and this company has grown so much. Tonight's a celebration. So hopefully there's some clarity soon, and we'll find out what's going on. Now, this does cast the whole event and the whole night and everything into a certain light, though, where you say tonight's a celebration. And it's like, yeah, is it a celebration, though, like somebody's birthday? Or is it a celebration like somebody's retirement party? Because it's kind of feeling like the other one, you know? Yeah. Like, it's feeling like the one where you say it's a celebration, but as one of those celebrations where at the end we all say goodbye. That's kind of, because if you're sitting here and you're saying, like, okay, I don't want to talk about it because it's just speculation, all this stuff. Like, you're definitely not saying, I plan to be doing this with Bellator for a long, long time. That's what you're not saying here.
I mean, as far as Scott Coker quotes go, this one is remarkably newsy. As far as I know, yeah, this is the first time anyone at Bellator in an administration role has confirmed that there is something happening, that there is a deal that is trying to be made here between Paramount or Viacom and some other party, which he pretty obviously implies and perhaps outright says in these quotes. So at least he's confirmed that much. Other than that, this is classic Scott Coker. This is, I don't want to talk about it right now. This is what the same thing that he said before the fight. And then after, it's pretty much, you know, saying almost exactly the same thing. But, yeah, then there's a second quote where he goes on to basically be like, hey, I don't own this thing, man.
You know, yes.
Kind of distances himself from the whole sale operation, which...
Here's that quote. Keep in mind, guys, I don't own Bellator. Bellator is not my company to own or to sell, to keep, to merge. It's owned by Viacom, and they have a process that they do, and they're doing what they need to do. But it's not something that I own to sell or not sell. The difference is I own Strikeforce, right? This is something that I don't own, so it's hard for me to really comment on that because it's completely different. Now, there are some feelings that feel the same, but at the end of the day, it's not my company. Does that sound to you like a Scott Coker who is already re-downloading Angry Birds on his phone because he's seeing the writing on the wall that, hey, you know, I've been through this before, I know what it's like, and that especially this time, I got even less say in what happens with the thing. And so if they decide they're going to sell it out from under us, that's just what's going to happen. And then so long and thanks for all the cheese.
Yeah, I do wonder what Scott Coker's fate would be if Bellator gets sold to the PFL. I mean, Scott Coker's been in the game for a long time. He takes a lot of heat in this industry, but he's actually been pretty successful for a guy who has spent almost all of his career outside the UFC. He's 61 years old, so I don't know if he would want
to... Wow, really?
Yeah.
I'm being fucking thrown for so many loops. Gordon Ryan's 28 and Scott Coker 61?
Yeah. Yeah.
Gordon Ryan should be much older. Scott Coker feels much younger.
Yeah.
Well, how crazy, can this be?
Crazy mixed up world out there, man.
I don't like it.
Who knows if Scott Coker would want to continue or if he might retire or whatever. I could see him being kind of an asset to PFL if they wanted him around over there, but who knows what the deal might be. So in some ways, maybe he did have to handle it the way he handled it. I don't know. God bless Bellator, though, because they're still trying to get shit on the books. They're still trying to set stuff up. Yeah. Did you see this after Chris Cyborg went out there and put a very Chris Cyborg style whooping on Kat Zingano? And then there's the failure for them to squash the beef. And then they brought Leah McCourt in there, right? To go nose to nose with Chris Cyborg. Like they're setting up a future fight. And I was like, God bless them. God bless them for still doing this. Company might not be around next month, but we're still trying to, push it forward with a new fight. So respect them for it.
I mean, you're working on that old salami line. You're going to keep chopping the salamis until the salamis stop coming, Chad. That's all you can do in this business. Keep trying to set up the next fight until they tell you that there is no next fight. I did think it was interesting. Chris Cyborg trying to come over and basically do that it was all to sell the fight kind of stuff with Kat Zingano. And Kat Zingano essentially being like, I'm not going to be your friend. Yeah. Like, say what you want. You made a website about me, you know, all that kind of stuff. So at this point, we're not going to be buddies. Yeah. And which I felt like, fair enough, Kat Zingano. Fair enough. You know, like Cyborg wants to play nice now and be like, oh, you know, it was all just business. You could be like, okay, fine, it's just business. But like, I don't want to be your buddy. So go celebrate somewhere else. I don't blame her for that.
It was a very Bellator 300. You had Liz Carmouche and Alima Lee McFarlane, as you mentioned, in that fight where McFarlane missed weight. So it was only a title fight for Liz Carmouche. It also seems like McFarlane came into the fight with a pre-existing injury. Anytime a fighter misses weight, you always kind of got to wonder. It looked like she hurt her knee somewhere in the second or third round. And then we just kept kicking at it until finally she collapsed and that fight was over. Then you had Chris Cyborg pretty much where Kat Zingano out in 4 minutes and 1 second. And then Usman Nurmagomedov pitched a shutout against Brent Primus in the main event. It would also be very Bellator if we never got to this Bellator 301 card that actually looks kind of dope because it has Yaroslav Amosov defending his welterweight title. You got the men's bantamweight unification fight, Sergio Pettis against Patchy Mix. You got Danny Sabatello and Rufian Stotts. You got AJ McKee and Sydney Outlaw. And then you got Patricky Pitbull and Alexander Shabili in the curtain jerker there. So if that was one that just existed on paper, that would be a very Bellator way to kind of pull the plug. You are also having Bellator lightweight Grand Prix semifinal fights on these cards. So again, very Bellator if we never quite get to the end of that 155-pound Grand Prix.
Yeah. You know, as you were saying about what becomes of Scott Coker if this is the end of the road for Bellator. And I mean, for one thing, finding out that he's 61 and I'm still trying to wrap my head around that.
Wow, you're really reeling from that. Like, how old did you think he was? Did you think Scott Coker was one of these guys who turns 29 every year?
I thought Scott Coker has been 52 for the last 15 years. You know? Like, he's one of those guys where he looked 52 when he was 30, probably. Yeah. And now that he's 61, he looks 52. So, fine. But one thing I think that you do got to give Scott Coker some credit for is that he has been in this sport for a long, long time. Been a promoter for a long time since the sport was still crawling out of the primordial ooze. And he was one of the guys leading the charge in California, put on that big first show in California with Frank Shamrock and Cesar Gracie. That, I mean, I still remember excitedly refreshing the black and white page of ShareDog.com to find out how that one went. It was a big deal at the time. And he was back there making that stuff happen. And to be not only still in it at this point, but also to be one of the few people on the promoter side who is still in it and who people, for the most part, do not have much bad stuff to say about him.
Yeah.
That is so rare, especially for a promoter in this sport. That where there's not a bunch of people walking around carrying just fucking blood feuds in their hearts about him. I mean, like, Scott Coker fucked me and I will never forget it. There's not. You just don't really hear that much. And you hear it all the time about other promoters, managers, people like that. With Scott Coker, you just don't. And that's kind of amazing to have just been in this business for that long and not have left a trail of bitterness and anger in your wake.
Yeah, no, good point. Good point. All right, that's going to do it for round number two. We'll be right back with round number three. Well, Ben, last week, Conor McGregor got on the grams and posted that he had, quote unquote, sent his stuff to Jeff Nowitzki. And we all hailed that as a potential sign that Conor McGregor was almost back in the USADA testing pool. This week, Dana White confirms that the stuff has been sent, but stops short of saying that Conor is back in the pool. He says he's not officially in the USADA testing pool. He submitted the paperwork. Probably by Monday he'll be submitted again. Don't hold me to that, but the paperwork is submitted next week sometime. Now, normally you have to wait 6 months after you get into the pool, although the UFC has a special get-out-of-jail-free card with their relationship with USADA, where they can give a person a special discompensation waiver. Well, they don't actually spend 6 months in the pool, and then Mark Hunt gets to take you to court for years after that. So we'll have to see what happens with Conor McGregor. But Dana White, he's kind of downplaying it right now. He's sort of, as you noted on Friday in the Power Hour, been downplaying the return of Conor McGregor for a little while now, saying that he never said when it was going to happen, which doesn't seem entirely true. But here's the new quote. "I literally have nothing planned for Conor McGregor right now. The paperwork is being submitted. We'll play it by ear, see how things work out. There's still a lot of things that have to happen as far as fights go, and then we'll decide where he's going to land. As I said at the top of the show, I don't believe you. I saw Aaron Bronstetter several weeks ago tweet that Dana White had said they got plans for fights 2 years out, that they're in there doing war room shit at the UFC offices with the big magnetic board that they got in there, planning out fights for 2 years. And you tell me you don't have anything in mind, no plans, nothing, even tumbling around in your UFC noche addicted mind that you might want to do with Conor McGregor? I don't believe you. I think you probably have plans."
Okay. Just to sit over here and play devil's advocate a little bit. What if what Dana White really means when he says something like this is, "I have given up on believing that you can make plans about the future of Conor McGregor. Maybe I once believed that. Maybe I continued to believe it for too long. But I have reached a point where I had to admit to myself that you don't know what the hell this guy's going to do. You don't know if he's going to do anything at all. And so therefore, you can't really make too many firm plans around the Irishman at this point." Is it possible that that's what he's really meaning? That's what he's really thinking when he says this?
It's possible, but you know, we saw these reports last week that, you know, you're creeping up on UFC 300. It's probably going to be in the spring, maybe in April, which, oh, by the way, if Conor gets into the USADA testing pool this week, mid-April would be the six-month deadline for him having been in the pool. There was some rumblings that we're going to do Conor McGregor versus Michael Chandler as the main event of UFC 300, which, as you and I both commented last week, actually seemed fitting. If you're going to have a big gala 300 event, you want to put something big on top of it. Well, Conor McGregor versus Michael Chandler kind of fits the bill for that. But again, and maybe this is what Dana White's thinking, I guess I'll echo your thoughts to say, what are the odds Conor McGregor can keep himself out of trouble for the next 6 months?
Yeah, I mean, clearly you don't book the guy as the Ultimate Fighter coach opposite Michael Chandler if there's no plan, right? Like that tells us that you at least thought you had a plan at some point there.
Yeah.
But then also, you know, there's a lot of variables, a lot of moving parts. You got to work around the guy's love for water sports, safety awareness and stuff like that. And you just never know when you might just stop hearing from him. You know, like, I could understand if the UFC was like, "We can't tell ourselves, can't sit here, put it on the big whiteboard, Conor McGregor versus anybody in UFC 300, and that's our plan, and you know, that's what we'll build around," because you don't know. Like, that's probably part of the problem for them in dealing with a guy like Conor McGregor at this point. So I could see that if that was their position, I guess I would understand it. What I wonder, and I'm hoping that somebody will get around to being able to ask somebody who might provide some answers, is, why now did Conor McGregor get his stuff in to Jeff Nowitzki? Why now are we back in the pool? Like, if there's no plan, as the UFC claims, like, where there's nothing where he got to get back in the pool now because we have this date on the calendar circled for him and a fight already in mind for him. Why now? Why not 3 months ago? Why not 3 months from now? Why now? What did we find out, maybe? What did we think? Where do we think we are? And just in terms of our body makeup that made it so that now is the time to get back in the pool.
Yeah.
Because it seemed like there was a lot of talk and a lot of opportunities to do this well before now.
I assume that Connor had like a detailed to-do list that he needed to cross things off of, you know, get the window screens out of the garage and clean them off. Get the kids signed up for martial arts classes, make a run.
Take the fuck you suit to the cleaners.
That's right. Make a run to Goodwill with some stuff they've been trying to get rid of. And, you know, he just crossed them all off and finally got down to submit my stuff to Jeff Nowitzki. And then he got it done. It does seem, as you note, kind of suspicious that if they are planning potentially to put Conor McGregor on UFC 300, that he would sign up potentially to the very week when his six-month USADA testing period would be up in order to put him on UFC 300. And you questioned whether or not we found some stuff out. Maybe some results came in the mail. I don't know. That's just speculation. We don't know that for sure, but maybe you were waiting for, should we say, the all clear from a third party?
Oh, okay. When you're saying results came in the mail, I thought you were saying like maybe he got the letter from the law school saying he didn't get in, but try again next semester.
That's right. It was either go get his MBA or fight Michael Chandler at UFC 300. And he got his letter back from Harvard saying, hey, man, we already let one MMA fighter in, so we can't take another one. Sorry. And so now he's going to fight Michael Chandler.
He applied to do his MFA in ceramics over there at Trinity College, and they were like, and he got the letter, and he was standing there in this house, and he'd be like, oh, they let me in, but they're not giving me a TA.
Yeah, I got waitlisted.
I don't know. Yeah.
Got waitlisted, so I guess I better plan to fight Michael Chandler. All right, let's do Just Saying Stuff, and then we'll get out of here for this week. Ben, I was cruising around the internet, as I so often do, earlier today, and I saw this bloody elbow story saying that there are now talks between Jake Paul and recently released WWE wrestler and former UFC fighter Matt Riddle to have a fight together. Matt Riddle, of course, the former UFC Ultimate Fighter guy, came into the UFC, eventually got, you know, one of the few guys who got drummed out over marijuana, I believe, long before you could do a podcast with Rampage Jackson where you said you smoked 15 blunts a day. They basically ousted Matt Riddle from the UFC for it. And now he's a free agent. He's a guy who comes with some considerable personal baggage in several different ways. But here we are talking about a potential boxing match between Jake Paul and Matt Riddle, to which I say, I'm just saying, ugh, man, I don't know. That doesn't seem too great to me. I don't know if that's something I would be interested in, but at the same time, did goddamn Jake Paul just maneuver himself into another fight where lots of people are going to watch and obviously he's going to win? Because, you know, we've talked a lot about how he made his money beating up MMA fighters who didn't have a ton of boxing experience, and maybe that well was running a little dry for him. Well, here, he has potentially figured out a way to fight not only another aging former MMA fighter who wasn't super into striking back in his time, but he's also now a guy who you got to think is dragging a bunch of WWE followers around on his social media. And so you could get a little bit of a double whammy here if you're Jake Paul. You could draw in some curious MMA folks, and you could also draw in some WWE fans. So I'm just saying, did goddamn Jake Paul potentially do it again?
I mean, once again, maybe Jake Paul's greatest talent is target selection.
I'm just saying.
Well, Chad, this week I'm just saying, did you notice that in his post-fight comments, Joe Pyfer had some words for the clickbait media? He was talking about stories that went around this week, and he was saying, you know, all the clickbait media who ran stories claiming that I was unhappy with my pay, you know, it's not true. I love the UFC and how I'm being paid and everything. I'm just saying, here's a quote from Joe Pyfer from before this fight doing media leading up to the fight, this one from Cage Side Press, but I saw this same quote kind of all over the place in the week leading up to the fight. If I'm going to fight the top 15, which are the baddest men in the world, I want to start working towards financial security, and I'll risk my health, my body, everything so I can secure that. I do not want to be one of these guys who's done fighting and is brokenhearted that was giving his everything for the minimum. Then the article even steps outside the quotes to note, Pfeiffer was clear that he wasn't complaining about his pay for the Al-Hassan fight. Still, quote, you want me to fight top 15 guys? Let's talk real money. That's it. That's all. I want to be a superstar. I have the charisma. I have the confidence. I have the fight style. I have it all. But I want to know that I'm okay if and ever I have to retire early or quit this sport or whatever. So I'm just saying that seems like they are saying exactly what you're saying, because Joe Pfeiffer went on the board and said, hey, clickbait media talking about I'm unhappy with my pay. No, I'm not. I just want to be paid more if I'm going to have to fight tough guys, which is exactly what every story I saw about it said. Then, Jed, I'm going to step way back here to another story from May 4th, 2023. This one by the very prolific MMA Fighting Newswire. Mm-hmm. Joe Pfeiffer not in rush to fight top 15 talent on current UFC salary. Quote, I'm not stupid. Claims that he has already turned down other opponents because he just didn't feel like he was at that point yet. Listen, I'm very happy. Dana White treats me good. I don't know the man personally, but as far as business, it's been good. I'm not making buku dollars, so that's why I don't want anybody in the top 15. I'm not stupid. I'm not going to fight the toughest guys in my career without that part of it matching. I'm not dumb. I've been in the game a long time, and that's where it's Eddie Alvarez is helping, people that mentor me. I'm just saying, I think Joe Pfeiffer's stance on this is very clear at this point.
Yeah. He wants to get paid more money.
He wants to get paid more money if he's going to fight better opponents. Which, I'm also just saying, is a little bit of a fuck you to the current opponents. Because it says, I don't think they're that good. Therefore, this money that I'm making now is good enough to fight them because they kind of suck. But I'm just saying, I think we understand you on this point. I don't think the clickbait media is doing you any disservices. I think that they're saying and doing a pretty good job of broadcasting the thing that you have been saying for a while now, Joe Pfeiffer. I'm just saying.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's Co-Main Event podcast. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Remember, Ben Folks and I are over on the Patreon page all week. We got the Wednesday live chat where we take 60 minutes of your questions and nothing else. You can get into that for $1. $1 cover charge at the door for the live chat. Thursday, doing the damn thing. Friday's Power Hour. We have fun. You should check it out. Patreon.com/co-main event. As for the rest of you, we'll talk to you next week. We are done. We are through. We are out.
We didn't even get to talk about this silly little guy, Paulo Costa, running around with his arm all bandaged up.
Yeah, is he doing some prop comedy? Are we doing some prop comedy there, or is it, are we actually never putting this thing in jeopardy?
Says he just had surgery, like a month ago.
Well, I saw he was going to be a guest on the MMA Hour today, so maybe we'll get some clearance.
I'm looking at him right now. Oh. He's on the MMA Hour. He's got his arm wrapped up in a giant-ass ace bandage.
Is he wearing, like, a Groucho Marx nose or anything? Like,
You'd never know with this SLG.
Yeah. Did he get out a sledgehammer and smash any watermelons or anything like that?
You never know what to believe. I don't get sick of it. I love every minute.